Welcome to the Manor.
Welcome back to the Twin Terrors Macabre Manor of Mead, Metal, and Mayhem. I'm Jody.
Who did not need a moment. I'm James, who offered one and Jody didn't take it. I don't need a moment. I'm done talking to your ass tonight because we're on episode 3 and I just want you to finish.
That's what she said.
The things Jackie said for 200, Alex. Anyway. Yeah. When we first started recording tonight, or I think it was when Jody and I were texting about what we're going to do tonight, he's like, "We doing more D&D, or you want to do some things to mix things up?" And I'm like, let's do some D&D. How excited I am about all these episodes. Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
50th anniversary.
Yeah.
Except this episode's on 1973. So, before we get there, are you drinking anything different than the previous two episodes we've recorded, my fine gentleman?
I finished drinking, and I finished off the last of the Malort that was in that bottle. So I think right now I'm probably...
That's wise, and I'm impressed with how good you're doing after those two things.
I did eat right before we started recording, so...
That would help, but I heard you taking a snack in between a couple episodes.
Yeah. Yeah, that wasn't much. That was only like a couple of little cookies.
Cookie. Now, well, to be fair, even though I had one beer before we started recording and I'm on beer 3 during now, I've been having some poker pub mix, which is helping lay down a little baseline there for me.
Okay.
But I've moved on to the previous was Three Floyds, Return of the Ancients. But now I thought, I'm going to do Three Floyds, Alpha Claws.
Oh, Alpha Claws.
Yeah, they're Christmas Winter Spiced Porter.
Nice.
Yeah, Alpha Claws, Alpha Claws. Dun, 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 dun. Don't see the ABV on the bottle easily, so I'm not going to stress about it, but I know it's anywhere from probably around 6%, maybe closer to 7.
Okay.
But me, whatever. Whatever, Joker. Yeah, it's the first time I've ever tried to impersonate Harley Quinn.
That we know of.
Look, what happens between a husband and a wife? Or the Asian massage parlor. Anyway. 1973. The year before D&D's 50th anniversary. So obviously, it's 2024. If it's 50th anniversary, it means it got published in 1974. So these are how everything was leading up to that fantastical 50th thing, which I think actually, so as we record this, it's January 16th. I think it actually was released like on January 25th or something. I saw on Facebook earlier, somebody had posted.
Huh, cool.
Yeah, I don't actually have, in all of my readings, I don't have the actual date. So for all I know, that jackwad is making up a date, but it's all good. We're fine.
Yeah, it could be.
It was early in the year, so maybe they're not. 1973. Gary Gygax and Dave Arneson, who we've talked about. Gary asked Arneson to collaborate on a new game.
Yeah.
His first draft of D&D was written while Gygax was editor at Gwydon Games, who we mentioned a couple episodes ago, that was based out of Evansville, Indiana.
Yeah.
And the very first typewritten draft was simply titled The Fantasy Game.
Uh-huh.
And here's what we mentioned previous episode where we're kind of talking about 50-50 between the two of them and how they had different strengths. And my note is, Arneson had the creativity and Gygax could synthesize it. Really did take both, because Dave did have all these wonderful ideas that Gary thought were great, but then Gary could put them into rules that everybody could use and make it usable for beyond Arneson's Twin Cities group. Yeah, and this initial draft had about 100 pages and set it up so that the referee would have to create about a dozen levels where a fighting man or a cleric or a magic user would go down into in the dungeon, which matches up pretty much with Gary's Castle Greyhawk that we mentioned in the previous D&D episode. And when we get there, you'll see that those three specific classes are important. We'll mention that they wanted to make sure as they gained experience, they gained powers so they could go deeper into the dungeon, which we mentioned as experience points with Arneson. And their gold they would find would allow them to buy items from the nearby towns, and they could even build castles. Castles.
Castles. Okay. Because it didn't sound like you said castles.
No, well, whatever it sounded like, I certainly wrote and tried to say castles. Damn you, three Floyds.
Sounded like you said assholes.
Oh, they hire assholes. A little note here says players and referees would have to flesh out the world, which is true because at this point they weren't putting out supplements of Greyhawk or Waterdeep or Bistara or anything. It was up to the referee to make the world and start it, but then the players, just like we talked about, Kuntz and Gygax, would then help flesh it out a little bit together. And it truly was Arneson's brainchild, but his mechanics just weren't great and his typing was horrible. According to Mary Jo Gygax, Gary's wife, who did a lot of the typing, she said Arneson couldn't punctuate or use grammar or even really spell. So was truly collaborative because without Arneson, it wouldn't have existed. Without Gary, it never would have became anything. Arneson made the character classes, the over idea. Gary added the experience points and character levels and hit dice. Although, to reiterate what we've mentioned a few episodes ago, this was already partially a thing with Dave's Blackmoor and their collaborative Don't Give Up the Ship. And they really wanted Conan over Tolkien with barbarians and demons and dark sorcerer wizards. Ooh.
I can see that.
I do too. The actual dungeon delving and everything is way more Conan, with some nice Tolkien influences.
Right.
Weren't we in one of our recent episodes that we talked about going on about Conan and dark wizards?
I don't know if we did or not.
Think it might have been the 50th anniversary of Weird Tales magazine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which I. Yeah, that did come out. But yeah, where Conan goes against the dark wizard. Oh, look, here he goes against the dark sorcerer. Oh, look, in this story, look, another dark sorcerer. Anyway, at this time, Don Lowry, who we have mentioned, who owned the Gwydon Games in Evansville, Indiana, he had moved to Maine because he wasn't doing super well and he and his wife thought they'd do better. The move was inhibiting publishing, though. So in May 1973, that was the last time Lowry sent Gygax money, and Gwydon Games was pretty much done except for back copies of games that Lowry had. So who would publish McGarry's Dungeon of Pashacotta, which was the original name of Dave McGarry's Dungeon board game? Ooh, you all learned something new. Maybe. I don't know. Sounds like Jody knew it. But who'd publish his Dungeon of Pashacotta, or who would publish this new game, fantasy game, that would become D&D? Well, they did want to get it out as soon as possible, so nobody could beat them to it, because they had been sending out several testing versions to a lot of people. This is where I tried to make my notes more streamlined, because the first round was like six people, then they sent out to about a dozen, and yeah, overall, there were quite a few people who had this game that could publish it, because remember in the first or second episode, nobody expected much of any of these games. They would publish the rules in hopes of selling miniatures. So they wanted to get it out. There were several ideas for names, and Gary's youngest daughter, 6-year-old Cindy, was the one who said she liked Dungeons and Dragons best, and that's the name that stuck.
That's I was gonna say that was kind of what I read on that too. He had a list. He liked the alliterative stuff. So, I'm sure Dungeons and Dragons wasn't the only one that was alliterative.
Probably not, and probably why one of the knockoffs, Tunnels and Trolls, is still kind of around, because alliteration always
Yeah.
is awesome.
Well, and I know I mentioned that in later years, actually, when he died, he was developing, and I think had started publishing his Castles and Crusades game, which he took the name from one of the previous newsletters or something that they had, or Castle and Crusades Society or something. They had done something previously with that name
It was a
prior
Castles
to
and
Dungeons.
Crusaders Society, which we actually talked about 2 or 3 episodes back. Well, 2 or 3 D&D episodes back. However, these are split up.
Right.
Okay, ready for me to move on?
Yes.
Oh, hey, look, here we go. Turn the page, and there it is. The first draft was tested by about a dozen of his closest gaming friends in the spring of 1973. His second draft was around 150 pages, and he had tested those with about 30 gamers. So that's the pool of people who had the rules. And okay, now, to get kind of back to Don Lowry, do want to mention, because we are all about context, part of Don Lowry's problem stemmed in 1973 because of oil prices, Jesus, oil prices on Earth. Say, boy, let's go play some D&D. Of course, part of Don Lowry's problems stemmed in 1973, where oil prices were through the roof and inflation was high. The unemployment rate was high. And between the Vietnam War and the Cold War, which also dampened the economy, which affected every part of the economy, including hobby gaming, especially boutique gaming companies, he really just wasn't doing super well. I cannot remember the other game company. There were two big ones, and I've mentioned Avalon Hill, which is the biggest. There were only a couple that really did super good enough to weather these issues.
SPI was the other one, I think.
That's it. That's the one.
I don't remember what SPI stands for, but I did see that when I was doing the wargaming notes.
Yeah, thanks. That's perfect. Yeah, because they were the two that were always in front of TSR, that we'll get to eventually here, in terms of sales for the first few years. But anyway, Don Lowry of Gwydion Games was offered the first chance to publish it, but he didn't think anyone would want to spend hours creating a dozen dungeon levels. So he obviously had no idea about nerds with no time on their hands, or with all the time on their hands and huge swaths of ADHD. Combine that with not doing well, not having the money, probably makes sense. And my next little note is, who would want to spend hours of time prepping as a referee? Oh, us.
Okay, so can I say something about that? So when you're the dungeon master or game master, if you're playing something besides D&D, for me, it's wanting to tell a story. And I guess it's a collaborative story. I mean, you come up with the plot and it's up to the players how it turns out.
Right.
That's why you would want to sit and come up with all this stuff as a dungeon master, because you want to tell a story. And to entertain people, and even if it's just your friends that you're sitting around the table with.
Yeah, accurate.
I thought so.
I always did it because I needed an outlet for creativity, but I wouldn't have also done it if I didn't want all my players to enjoy it, even when they fucked everything up.
I don't know what you're talking about.
So, as a tangent, but it's apropos at least, I belong to several threads on between Facebook and Reddit and all these things. And somebody asked, I made this huge story and area, and all my characters want to do is go east. And that's not where it's set. What should I do? And my first thought was what like 80% of the people said was like, just move it to the east. When they get there, use exactly what you were gonna do.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't waste your stuff, but it's fun. I mean, it's collaborative. Let your players think they're in charge. But anyway, but was that all you wanted to say, or did you have more?
No, that was it.
Okay, no, that's good. Certainly don't mind if you go more in on that.
No, that's it.
My next note says that Gygax said that Lowry was a nice guy, but a piss poor manager. Which, looking into the future, my next note says, "Hello, pot, I'm the kettle." So what would happen is that I mentioned Don K a little bit ago.
Yes, you did.
A very close friend of Gygax, been very close friends since Gygax had moved as a young child from Chicago to Lake Geneva. They realized they were gonna have to publish it on their own, but they didn't know where they're gonna get the money. So Don K used his life insurance policy to pull $1,000 out as seed money to start TSR. K gave the money. Gygax would do the writing based off of Arneson's ideas. And 1973 was the partnership where Don K and Gary Gygax created Tactical Studies Rules based on their local war gaming group called Tactical Studies Rules, or TSR for short. Here's where TSR starts. So even though D&D's 50th anniversary is 2024, TSR's 50th anniversary is 2023. And that $1,000 from Don K's insurance was not enough, even after they published their first actual game by TSR called Cavaliers and Roundheads.
Yeah,
Is a
heard that.
yeah is a the more basic wargaming thing that we had talked about a couple episodes ago about the English Civil War. And that is where their friend Brian Bloom comes in. Brian Bloom, and this name will be very important, although not as much now, su super important later. Well, super important now, or they would have never gotten off the ground, but it's the weirdness that comes in later comes from partially him. But he's friends and was in their group, knew them, and he came in with $2,000 because he believed there was a future in this thing. So, yep, between the $3,000, they had a partnership with Don K, Brian Bloom, Gary Gygax, and they all went in together as equal one-third partners. Even though I don't want to go huge on biographies, I do have a note here that says Brian Bloom has a degree from Wabash College in Indiana.
Crawfordsville, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I mentioned that because I have family that lived in Crawfordsville who have degrees and or worked at Wabash College. Yeah, so to my mom's only one, I mean, she's got several siblings, but she's the second from oldest. And her oldest, my Aunt Nancy, my cousins, and my uncle, I know one of them got a degree from there, and one of them worked there. So kudos. But evidently, according to Gary, Don was the president, Brian was the vice president, and Gary was the oppressed and hardworking editor. Yeah, Gary had mentioned that he thought running a company would be like leveling up a character in D&D, which goes a long way to showing the wonderful start, but not really getting the end game, which could possibly destroy a character or a company. I do want to mention that the Cavaliers and Roundheads was TSR's first official publication, and they did it in hopes of raising some money. It was a miniature war game based on the English Civil War. And it was published with Jeff Perrin, who's also Gary's co-author on Chainmail.
Yes.
And Jeff Perrin is from Rockford, Illinois.
Okay.
You know who else is from Rockford, Illinois?
Not Scrooge McDuck.
No. And I don't
Get
even think
tricked.
I have an overlap for this because The dream police, they live inside of my head.
Yeah, Cheap Tricks from Rockford, Illinois.
That's right. Although I will say Scrooge McDuck only once went did a cheap trick to get his money. Otherwise, he made it sharper than the Sharpies. And
Anyway, moving on.
yeah, moving on. Yep. Yeah, I have nothing with Scrooge here, but Rockford, Illinois is where Cheap Trick is from. And
Yeah.
other than that, I simply want to mention that TSR's first logo was an overlapped G and K for Gygax and K, Gary Gygax and Don K.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Quite neat. And otherwise, that's rather it for 1973, because although there might be a little bit of overlap with like the artwork and stuff, I figured all of that should go in when we get to 1974 and the true 50th, when it's published, and we can go into what those things were. So that is all I have for 1973.
That was short.
Like a hobbit. Oh, sorry, Tolkien Estate, like a halfling.
I was just looking at that. It wasn't the Tolkien Estate, it was Tolkien Enterprises, which is the ones that's the company that has all the film rights. That was Saul Zance, the Saul Zance company, were actually
Sure,
the ones that were.
I'm on page 18 and you're jumping ahead to my 20 page 29 notes, but yeah,
Yeah.
sure.
I'm just okay. Well, I won't go into any more detail on that.
Oh, no, I don't care if you do, because actually I know the name, but I think I actually took it out because I tried to streamline everything so that you could jump in and make it better. But yes. Although I guess we should wait, because at this point in time, they can publish it with the term Hobbit, which they did. And it wasn't until they started getting things out there that they're like, what the fuck? Now, but yes, Jody is accurate there. It's accurate, Jody. Now, that was Kung Fu Grip action. Weren't we talking about that right before we started recording? Anyway.
moving on.
Moving on, that's what I have for 73, and I am ready to end this episode. But if you had things on Blackmore, Tolkien, we can keep going.
I don't have anything right now.
All right. In that case, I say we finish this up, and next D&D episode will actually be in 1974.
All right.
In the meantime, rate us, review us, share us, write us, do the things on social medias. Do the nice things. Stop being dicks to each other.
Yeah.
I'm James.
I'm Jody.
And we'll talk to you later.
Bye.
The Macabre Manor is brought to you by the Twin Terrors. All rights reserved. Stay tuned for some fun outtakes.
Don't know what I did to my shoulder, but it fucking hurts.
Were you doing too much cocaine and fell asleep on it?
Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe I should just read a sentence or two ahead before I start going on about me being a dumbass.